Hi, Bomb Squad. This is Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. Today's show is sponsored by Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Le Cordon Bleu has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from nine-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. And we have a new sponsor, La Brea Bakery, which was founded in 1989 in Los Angeles with a commitment to time-honored bread-making traditions. Visit labreabakery.com to learn more about La Brea's sustainable sourcing, patient artisan baking process, and where nationwide you can find their products. La Brea Bakery, every detail deliciously done. Hi, everybody. Carrie Diamond here. How is everyone doing? Is your head spinning from the past 24 hours, the past 48 hours? Mine is. Happily, I am back on the road tomorrow for the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour. It's the last leg of the road trip. On Sunday, I'll be in Charleston at Monarch Wine Merchants, hanging out with the F&B radio gals. We'll have wine from women winemakers, of course, snacks from great local makers, and just a lot of fun. We'll be signing books, so come on by and see us. It's 3 to 5. Tickets are available on cherrybomb.com. I would absolutely love to see you on Sunday. And if you have any Charleston recos, just tweet me at Carrie Diamond or leave a comment at CarrieBomb on Instagram. For today's cookbook call-in, we're talking to Avery Ruzica, co-founder of Manresa Bread. Avery gave us a recipe for the Cherry Bomb cookbook for whole wheat chocolate chip cookies, and we have her on the line to talk about it. Hi, Avery.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. Well, we're baking away over here, so we're having a good time.
I have no doubt. I was looking at your Instagram today and having, I don't know, what do you call bread FOMO? BOMO? I don't know.
it's everywhere right now for sure.
Fermentation FOMO.
For Christmas, so.
Oh, right. Sorry. I saw did you say panettone, panettone? How do you say it?
I say panettone just because I don't speak Italian, so I feel like I just go with panettone. But we are deep in panettone world. We were featured a little bit in a New York Times article yesterday in the Wednesday food section. So the orders have been rolling in. Very exciting.
Uh-oh.
So we're making panettone.
I saw a great photo of like a bubbling, gurgling panettone dough.
Yes, it is. It is very alive. It is alive and very. The word I would use is extensible. So it gets really stretchy and bubbly. It's really amazing.
Ooh,
pretty cool. So,
okay.
Yeah, having a lot of fun.
So we're talking about chocolate chip cookies today because I am obsessed with the chocolate chip cookie recipe that you gave us. And I have to be honest, when you gave us a chocolate chip cookie recipe, I thought it was a little bit of like maybe a chef FU. Like, I don't have time, so I'm just going to give you a chocolate chip cookie recipe.
Yeah,
and I was oh my God, the world doesn't need another chocolate chip cookie recipe.
Oh, but we do, right?
We do, because I made yours, and boy, did it change my life. It, honest to God, is the best chocolate chip cookie recipe on the planet.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. I was thinking about, like, how I started cooking and just growing up always cooking with my mom, and one of the things we almost always made were chocolate chip cookies. I loved making them. I didn't really like to eat them. And so I think that the thing about this chocolate chip cookie was I wanted to make a cookie that I really actually wanted to eat. Like, you know, like even though it's in my bakery every single day, like I still will go eat a cookie, you know? And I think we managed to do that. And I think it's just really about the quality of the ingredients in there and like really treating flour like an ingredient instead of just kind of like as a binding agent, or I don't know. We think flour, we kind of just this one word instead of it's all these other things. There's so many nuances. It's like the word person. Well, there's a trillion different kind of people. There's a million different kinds of flours, you know? And I think that makes a big difference in the cookie and why it's so enjoyable. I'm so happy to hear you like it.
Oh, totally. And the thing I love about it is if your only experience is the Toll House classic chocolate chip cookie, this is so different. in every way, shape, and form. But it's also the kind of cookie where you realize ingredients make all the difference. And can you talk about some of the ingredients that are in this chocolate chip cookie?
Absolutely. So, you know, we are a bakery that focuses a lot on milling flour and a lot on like laminated doughs. So when we were going to do a cookie, we wanted to figure out how it made sense for us as a bakery. And utilizing fresh milled flour was kind of the initial like, okay, that would be really cool. But then is anybody going to want to eat that? Like, is that going to taste like a health cookie or something, you know? And so that's where deciding what kind of wheat to use. So we use a red wheat for it, a California-grown red wheat. And then we use toasted whole walnuts. So, you know, whole walnuts versus walnut pieces. Walnut pieces are less expensive, but using the whole walnut, you get these really nice big pieces of, like, it's different somehow. And we toast them really hard so that you're not putting a raw nut into the cookie, and a lot more of the nut flavor comes through that way. And then we use the best quality chocolate we can find. So in our case, it's Valrhona, and we use a fairly dark, it's not a milk chocolate, and I guess you would categorize it as semi-sweet, but it's about 68% chocolate, and so it has a little acidity, like a really nice dark chocolate will have, but it still has a little bit of that creamy mouth feel like a milk chocolate would have. And I think then the ratio of all those ingredients to one another, and I don't want to forget that we use all brown sugar versus, like, your Toll House recipe is a combination of white sugar and brown sugar, and this chocolate chip recipe is 100% brown sugar, and I think that that really deepens the flavor.
So let's talk about,
makes a big difference.
You mentioned you toast the walnuts hard. I love that you use the word hard, because that's the part that bedevils me often, the toasting of nuts. I feel like you turn around,
really?
And yeah, it's me.
They go so quick.
Right. So I feel like I'm checking every 2 minutes and opening the stove too often. I think I just burned my pine nuts the other day making something.
Yeah, for sure.
What's, when you say toast them hard, walk us through that.
I think I typically toast nuts at like 350 degrees. And I think you're right. It's not something you want to walk away from. We have an oven that we can like create settings for, and we have literally a setting for toasting walnuts, and it is intentionally shorter than the actual time that you would really need to toast the nut as hard as you want, because that kind of requires of the baker to keep checking on it, because you keep having to add time, which is again intentional from my end, because they do go so quickly and nuts are expensive. But I think it is really important. I think that whether it's in bread or in like a cake or a cookie recipe, if you're going to incorporate a nut, you really want to make that flavor come through. And by toasting and warming up those oils, you get more flavor. But there is also a little bit of carryover cooking effect. So that is, you know, you can always put it back in the oven if you under toast it, right? But you can't undo it. So
nope.
I think a good way to do it is, or a good rule of thumb is to, you know, toast something for maybe 5 to 7 minutes in a 350 degree oven. Take it out of the oven, let it cool off slightly, taste one once it's cool, see if it really has the full flavor you're looking for. If not, throw it back in the oven for another, you know, 1 to 2 minutes. Not long. But I know that seems like a lengthy process just to make a cookie, but you know, you could toast a big batch of nuts and just have them on hand for throwing into anything, cookies, salad,
true,
whatever.
The toasted walnut though makes such a big difference. And then, so you've got the dough, which is unbelievable. And the one thing I need to tell people is the recipe only makes 10 cookies. So you might be in a little bit of a state of shock once you've done all this work, but you literally shape them into the size of hockey pucks. And then,
right.
So why so big?
Because we use such big pieces of ingredient in it, you know, because we try to use those whole half pieces of walnut rather than like the little broken pieces that you can buy. And we chop up our chocolate ourselves by hand and then the cookie dough itself, like the ratio of the flour the flour, sugar, butter portion to the nut chocolate portion is kind of like 1-to-1. And so I think that if you try to enjoy them in a smaller format, you don't get the full effect. You don't get the full kind of like nut chocolate dough ratio. It still will be delicious, but I think for it to really be like to make truly enjoy all those great ingredients that you decided to put in this cookie, like I think that size cookie is nice, and also it's really delicious.
It is. I don't think I've made 10 full cookies yet, because the dough itself is so good that you do wind up eating a lot of the cookie dough if you love cookie dough.
Really yummy. And I was going to say, and also when you have a big cookie, you know, you want to eat more than a little bite of that cookie, and you want it to be the right bake. And I like a chewy cookie, not like weirdly chewy where it won't break apart or something, but something that is just barely set. And by having it be that large, I think it's the right size for baking gently and for a short amount of time to get that right texture.
So gently is the next key word. First we had hard, now gently.
Yes.
Because you literally only cook these for 10 minutes. You put them in, I think it's 350-degree oven, mm-hmm. cook for 5 minutes, turn the tray, cook for 5 minutes more, take them out, don't touch them. And it's such a short baking time, but if you follow that to a T, you honestly will be rewarded with the best chocolate chip cookie of your life.
Yeah, and you could do it, and they work from frozen too. Like you can make your dough ahead of time and have it in the, and they still only bake for 10 minutes, which is pretty cool. Like they just, I think again, that goes back to that ratio of dough to mix in. So, you know, the walnut isn't really cooking. The chocolate's not really cooking. You're just cooking that little bit of dough that holds it all together. You can't really even pick them up when they're first out of the oven.
You
have to let them cool slightly.
Yes.
Because
don't even try it.
Barely held together.
But then the other crazy thing about these cookies is day two, it's even better than mm-hmm. it was day one. If you actually happen to have any cookies left by day two.
Yeah, that's a nice benefit, isn't it? So if you wanted to go crazy and make a bigger bet, you know, to double the recipe, I think that they keep very well for many days. They're really delicious.
Well, we really, really
like them.
I do. You can tell I love them, right? I made them with my nephew last week, and we had to make a double batch because my sister has 3 boys, and she was like, "What, a cookie recipe that only makes 10 cookies? Like, that is crazy." But I was like, trust me. So anyway, we really, really appreciate you sharing that recipe. And we loved seeing you at Jubilee a few weeks ago in San Francisco. And we hope you have a fantastic holiday.
Thank you. You guys too. Well, we were really excited to be a part of the cookbook. We're going to be having it in our shop for Christmas as well. We're hoping our customers are excited about getting to get the book and have the recipe for themselves as well. So we're excited. Thank you so much for including us. It was lovely talking to you.
Put a plug in for the bakeries. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, yeah. So you can get these cookies at Manresa Bread in our Los Gatos, California and Los Altos, California retail shop. And then we also do some online shipping for the holidays with a variety of our different items at ManresaBread.com. So lots of good stuff to get for the holidays.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your time, Avery. Take care.
Thank you. You have a great day.
All right. So speaking of the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, it is out right now. It features more than 100 recipes from 100 of the coolest, most creative women in food. Man Repeller calls it a masterpiece. And the San Francisco Chronicle named it one of 2017's best cookbooks. You can find the Cherry Bomb Cookbook at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or your favorite indie bookstore. You know we have a lot of those. We've also got signed copies for sale on CherryBomb.com. All right. Well, I'm very excited for our next guest who has patiently sat here while we talked about chocolate chip cookies. Her name is Yasmin Khan. I have very rapidly become fond of this person. We had a great dinner the other night at Lilia here in Brooklyn. Yasmin is a human rights activist turned food writer who is challenging stereotypes of the Middle East one pomegranate at a time. And talking about great cookbooks, she's the author of The Saffron Tales, which you really should all go out and get right now. And she is co-host of the online series, we'll talk about this a little bit more in depth, called The Perfect Dish. So you can really see Yasmin in action if you find that online. But we're so thrilled to welcome her to Radio Cherry Bomb for the first time. So Yasmin Khan, welcome.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here. And I really want a chocolate chip cookie right now.
I know, I'm sorry. It really, you know, we've got so many recipes and so many amazing women who contributed recipes in that cookbook that people, you've got so many fans here, Yasmin. Everyone's saying hi to Yasmin today. We've got so many incredible women featured in the cookbook and their recipes. And the first question, and you probably had this when you were going around for the Saffron Tales, is what's your favorite recipe? And at least they're your recipes. Like when I have to pick among 100, I'm like, there, I can't pick one. But the chocolate chip cookie one really kind of turned me on, you know, it kind of just like kicked me in the butt a little bit, because like I said to Avery, I thought it was like an FU where here's a chocolate chip cookie recipe. Like when a master baker gives you a chocolate chip cookie recipe, you're kind of like, what? That's what you gave us? But then, like I said, I made it nice,
You can never have too many. I've got a chocolate chip recipe in my book. So it's with sour cherries and dark chocolate. And I also put like cocoa in the flour. So it's like really kind of slightly bitter, real depth of flavor. I don't know. You're right. On the one hand, you think like, does the world need more? But then there's just so much you can do with them. So well, I'm a fan.
This applies to so many things, but the exercise of having to put 100 recipes together really makes you realize, and we, you know, like you, we tested everything ourselves. You really realize that ingredients are like musical notes, and you can say the same thing. Does the world need another song? Of course the world needs another song, you know, and these women coming up with these recipes are no less, you know, they wouldn't call themselves fine artists, most of them, but you know, they're no less an artist than a musician, and it just happens to be the way they express their creativity, and the ingredients are their paint, their musical notes, their words, etc. So it was really beautiful to see how everyone expresses themselves that way. And that's, you know, it's sort of what you're doing. You're going around discovering the world through food and just seeing how everyone expresses themselves in a different way, and just how the vehicle of food is such a beautiful way to understand the world.
Yeah. And for me, actually, cooking is like an art. I think it's a craft that you can hone and use to really depict a whole series of emotions and transmit kind of feelings and share experience. And that's kind of what the great art does. And for me, what was really wonderful, kind of going around Iran, kind of interviewing people, collecting all these kind of beautiful ideas for Persian recipes, one of the best bits, and I'm doing it for my first book and my next book, is when you get into your kitchen and then you just have this blank canvas of like ideas and inspirations, and then you start developing recipes, and it's just such a joyful creative process. And it's one of the things I love about the work that I do, because especially like focusing on Middle Eastern food with kind of all the challenges and stereotypes and kind of general demonization of a lot of, you know, Middle Eastern communities.
Well, hello, the past. When I was talking about my head swimming from the past 24 hours, I was talking about all the harassment. It's just like, oh my God. The political stuff right now. We didn't say that Yasmin's from London.
Yeah.
And thank God your prime minister stood up and said something, because come on.
Yeah, absolutely. And in like today's political climate, it's been, I guess, even more important for me and what motivates me more in the work that I do. So obviously I produce cookbooks that have got beautiful recipes in them with incredible ingredients. But my books and my work are also about sharing stories. And I think in these troubled times, trying to share stories that connect us to people on the other side of the world and that can be used to celebrate our commonality is just, couldn't be more important. So
You did tweet something really funny. I was reading all your tweets about when a British person says, you know, oh, let's have lunch one of these days. It's sort of like, I really never want to see you again.
Yeah, it's like that British passive aggressiveness. But I mean, it's, you know,
But check out check out Yasmin's Twitter feed and you'll see what we're talking about. Okay, I'm going to stop you because I want to go back.
Okay.
Because there are so many interesting things about you that we could do like a 3-part series on Radio Cherry Bomb just about you. You did not start out in food. You started out as a human rights activist. So can you tell us a little bit about your previous life?
Yeah. So I I trained in law, and then I worked for a decade for nonprofits and grassroots groups in London, campaigning mainly on issues around equalities, so kind of race and women in employment. When I worked for a trade union, I worked on deaths in police custody, supporting families who'd lost loved ones after police shootings or restraints. Issue over there, as it is an issue here. And then I also worked for international development organizations. And for the last few years, before I transitioned my work was mainly around human rights in conflict zones. My areas of focus were Iraq, Afghanistan, and Israel-Palestine. So very few human rights there, so I was very busy.
How did you come to pursue that line of work and that part of the world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my mum's side of the family are from Iran, and I lived there as a small child for a little while after the revolution. So it was a very difficult time in Iran's history. The Iran-Iraq war was happening. The Iranian government was introducing all kinds of repressive laws. You know, I had very close family members in prison, tortured, executed. So sadly, like many people in the region, just, you know, our family experienced a lot of personal turmoil. And for me, that really gave me a sense of, I think, responsibility once I got older about, well, how can I try and do what I can to at least shed light on what's going on, and so that no other family has to try and go through what we went through. Obviously, it's still happening, but I think, you know, trying to make a contribution to raise awareness about, you know, people's struggles has always been a mission of my work, and it's something that's kind of translated into my food work, just through a more creative and artistic way. Because one of the most exciting things, you know, that we've been doing this year, for example, with, you know, I was saying, we were talking earlier about the Roads and Kingdoms connection. Well, you know, Trump's travel ban came in, and, you know, I collaborated with Roads and Kingdoms on a series of banned countries dinners where we kind of looked at the, you know, we did an event on Iranian food in New York, and then we went to San Francisco, using food as a way to celebrate these cultures that are being demonized, and over a delicious meal, really start to have those conversations that connect us.
Okay, so I'm going to drag you back one more time, because I think this is something a lot of our listeners can relate to. So you're incredibly passionate. You're tackling these very big issues. You're burnt out.
Yeah, I did that classic thing that, as you said, very common when you're doing something that you really love and that you're really passionate about. And so you put all of yourself into it and you kind of forget about self-care, which is basically what happened. You know, with some reflection, I can see that. You know, I was raring to go, really good at what I did, was living kind of in many ways my dream life, but without kind of putting in ways to take care of myself, to replenish, to rest, to rejuvenate. Yeah, I just had a classic burnout and had this really frightening couple of years where I had to kind of take a sabbatical from my work. I got diagnosed with chronic fatigue. Like, I just like burnt out. You know, I remember one of my doctor saying to me, you know, it's just like having your bank balance. If you start like spending too much money, you go into debt. And that's just what happened. Like, my energy reserves just went into debt. And so what I did is I ended up taking like some time out. My boss was lovely and he gave me like 6 months off and said, just go and get better. And so I went and went all Eat, Pray, Love and went to a beach in Thailand and did a lot of yoga and ate lots of delicious food. And then I thought, well, maybe, you know, I'll go to Iran for a bit just to spend some time with my family. And my family are rice farmers in Iran. So we've got this beautiful rice farm. There's also, it's kind of surrounded with like fruit trees, like kiwis and pomegranates and apples and oranges. They have like chickens. They grow all their own vegetables. So, I mean, it's a gorgeous place for a foodie. And so I went there and spent some time there. And when I came back to the UK, I realized that I wasn't physically or mentally still in that space where I could go back to a job that was so demanding on one level. And I thought, well, maybe there's something else I can do that plays on my skills of sharing stories, that helps me hone my craft of good food and good cooking. I've always been a huge cook and recipe, you know, developing all the time privately. And the Saffron Tales was just born from there.
All right, I'm going to stop you there too, because I want to go back. You said you did the whole Eat, Pray, Love thing. So Yasmin and I were at dinner and I said, all right, I have to ask, how the hell did you afford that? Because I think a big issue when a lot of us have burnout is you don't have an understanding boss. You don't have health insurance. You don't have all these things. And you reminded me that We have health insurance in the UK, which God bless the UK for that. But just talk, because it's not like you're super privileged and were able to just write a check and bankroll all this.
But I was lucky in that I owned an apartment. Mm-hmm. So I was able to rent out my apartment. And so obviously if you have a London apartment, that goes a long way somewhere much more affordable, like a beach hut in Thailand. But it also, I think, in terms of how I did it, like, I think it's easy a few years later when you're successful in a new field to gloss over how challenging and how frightening those periods are. I think so many of us go through those, you know, whether it's being laid off from a job or getting sick or going through a big separation with your partner. You have those moments in your life where you kind of hit the ground and you're like, okay, I just don't know how I'm going to get up. Like, I just don't know how I'm going to get up. And I think for me, that was one of the most, I guess, life-changing lessons that I got from that period, is that sometimes you think that the worst thing that's ever happened to you has happened. Like, you think that your health is so bad, you have to leave a job that you love. You don't know if you'll ever recover. You don't know how you're going to earn money again. If you're someone who is ill, you don't know how someone's going to, you know, date someone who is like that. I was so frightened every day because I didn't know what was going to happen. And the biggest thing it taught me is just to really kind of trust my intuition. Like, I knew I needed to step away from a job that wasn't serving me. And it's like that really cliched thing of like leaping and then you find the net, which is kind of what happened. And also it's also installed in me this thing that sometimes, you know, you think it's the worst thing, but actually the space that it creates once you go through that enables you to just rise up with a whole new, in a whole new persona.
Well, I've only known you for a little while, but I do get the sense that you're a very resilient person, because after spending a little bit of time with you, one of the words that really comes to mind, and I don't know if you like this word or not, but I think of you as a very effervescent personality. I mean, you are super substantial, but I feel like when you spend time with you, even when like I said, we could do a 3-part series on Yasmin, but you know, Yasmin was part of the San Francisco Jubilee and was on a pretty tough panel about appropriation, and I think it was called The Melting Pot Boils Over. And we touched on a number of subjects, one of them being culinary appropriation, which is a very big deal here in the United States. And Yasmin provided sort of like the counter view to that. So you are a very substantial person, but I feel like any kind of interaction someone has with you, you leave very just sort of enervated and excited and all of that. You even had that effect on Anthony Bourdain the other night. Yasmin, so this Perfect Dish series that Yasmin's doing, where can people find that?
Find that on Parts Unknown, which is connected obviously to Bourdain's kind of series. So yeah, go and log on. It's an 8-part series exploring the perfect dish in 8 Asian cities.
So good. It's so good. You have to watch it this weekend. But as part of the launch, Yasmin got to interview Bourdain the other night in New York City, and I went to it, and it was so much fun to watch her interview him, knowing I would be interviewing you just, you know, 2 days later. And you really, like, what did you say at the end? Like, he turned into this big hippie, this whole side of him that nobody really knew that he had, where he was just talking about, like, all anybody wants is, what did he say, a nice view and someone to love?
Yeah, and love and hope and peace. And, yeah, it was great. You know, I really enjoyed that chat. And I think, actually, what I found interesting about how that interview was done, and thank you so much for your kind words. A lot of people said that they enjoyed that interview and that they were quite surprised by kind of the direction it took. Is, you know, on the one hand, someone like Bourdain just, I think, certainly used to represent everything about kind of bro culture in the kitchen. I mean, Kitchen Confidential, for example, was so much about that. And like looking at where we are now, like almost, I don't know, 15 years later, seeing the kind of change that's come about in the industry, and also his journey was quite an important one for me to uncover. And I think it's that classic thing of when you get, I think, women asking questions I think conversations sometimes go in a different direction. So, you know, I'm really fascinated by Anthony Bourdain. I respect him so much. But, you know, for me, I didn't want to talk to him about, you know, what his favorite dish is. I want to know what someone of that stature really thinks about the state of the world, the state of the industry, and what gives him hope. And for me, that's a big channel in all of my work because I did so much heavy stuff in the earlier part of my career. I've really got to the stage now, you know, I've like seen enough and read enough and written enough about death and war, like for a lifetime. So what's interesting to me now, especially say here in the US, you know, with all of this stuff that's going on here, is that how can I best use what I contribute to the world to make people feel positive and energized and hopeful? Because the challenges we're up against are strong. And I think it's only by harnessing that kind of positive energy that we can propel ourselves forward to make the changes we need.
So I will kick myself if we don't talk about Persian food.
Yes.
Again, could be a whole episode. I joke that, you know, it's so hard to pick one thing from a cookbook to focus on. But for people who aren't familiar with Persian food, where do you even begin?
Oh.
just that question.
Right?
It's an easy one, right?
Yeah. So, well, you begin by buying a copy of the Saffron Tales recipes from the Persian kitchen.
That's a good place to start.
My publishers will be happy I said that. In all honesty,
everybody, it's a beautiful book. So whether you're shopping for yourself or for somebody during the holidays, honestly, you can't go wrong picking up that book.
Yeah, and it looks like a Christmas present. The cover is all gold and blue. And
there's,
you know,
so much better UK books. We talked about this. Yeah. Covers are so beautiful.
Because we're into books as like artwork. It comes back to that. And yeah, no, I mean, the book has been very popular. I've been so overwhelmed with the response it got, actually. It's been like a number one bestseller in like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal picked it as like books of the year. So yes, get your copy of that. But once you've got that, like, where do you begin? And I think one of the things that I found so rewarding about putting these recipes together is, you know, for many people, Persian food might seem like very exotic or very challenging or like, oh, how would I even start? But actually, you could probably make, I would say, 90% of the recipes in that book with stuff that you've already got in your store cupboards. You know, Iranian food is very fragrant. It's packed full of fresh herbs like cilantro and parsley and dill. And we, you know, chop those up finely and put them in soups and salads and stews. It's a cuisine that uses really aromatic spices such as kind of cinnamon. So there's a beautiful like Dayton cinnamon omelette, which is one of my favorite recipes in the book, that like is like my weekend alternative to pancakes. It's just so kind of sweet and buttery and caramelly. And you know, the other thing I think that really stands out about Iranian food is just these incredible kind of rice pilafs, like infused with saffron, and like stews infused with kind of dried limes and pomegranate molasses. I don't know. I think it's a really exciting to be able to bring forward a cuisine that people don't really know a lot about. Certainly here in the UK, I think London's really interesting. The last few years in London have just, you know, seen a boom in Middle Eastern food. So I'm kind of on a mission here to get everybody with a bottle of pomegranate molasses in their house, kind of cooking delicious food.
Absolutely. It's so funny. Izzy, do you know Izzy Hasek, who does Top with Cinnamon? She sent me a bottle of pomegranate molasses and I had never used it before. And it really should be one of those pantry staples.
It really is, because, you know, I use it. It's kind of, you know, the quintessential recipe I would use it in is this very famous stew in Iran called fisinjun, which is made with a sauce of ground walnuts that you just whiz up in a food processor and then you cook it with pomegranate molasses and you get this kind of rich, kind of Moorish, earthy, sweet and sour stew. And then you can drop either like chicken in there, or sometimes I make it with tempeh. But, you know, I also have pomegranate molasses in my kitchen and I just use it where I would use balsamic. You know, I put it in salads, I put it in stir fries. I use it anywhere I want to impart that kind of sweet and sour tang. You know, the dominant flavor of Persian food is agrodolce, a bit like the Italian flavors. So pomegranate molasses are great for that. In my grandmother's kitchen, she used to have like a row of pomegranate molasses, because we would have pomegranates, she would make her own, because it's just pomegranate juice that's like concentrated down. And she'd have a row ranging from sweet to sour. So depending on what she wanted to put in her dish, she would just use a spoonful of that.
Oh my God, I love that. That's amazing. So you've been gone from the UK for a while.
I
How long have you been here? Like a month and a half?
I know. Cherry bomb jubilee kind of prompted me to think maybe I'd come here. And then, yeah, it's been wonderful. Just, I kind of fell in love with New York a little bit, I think. Ooh. Don't tell London.
I won't.
I'm having an affair with New York.
Are you homesick?
Well, I'm flying back tomorrow, actually, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's, you know, the holidays are always a lovely time, but I think... you know, the US is a, you know, we've talked about some of the challenges, but I think for women and food, it's a really creative and warm and welcoming place. So I've really enjoyed my time here.
It's funny. I feel the same way about the London scene. You have so many incredible women over there. I think I'll be there in January.
Yay.
So I hope you're there and
absolutely.
We can spend some more time together and I get to see the London Bomb Squad. So thank you for squeezing us in before your flight home. It's, like I said, it's been wonderful getting to know you and I'm really happy you're part of the Bomb Squad.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to follow up on me, you can find me at Yasmin Khan Stories on Instagram, Yasmin Khan on Twitter. And yeah, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks so much, Kerry.
And two things, pick up the saffron tails and then go buy a bottle of pomegranate molasses. We will be right back after this break with Diana Yen of the Jewels of New York.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
La Brea Bakery was founded in 1989 with a commitment to time-honored artisan traditions. This means a patient 24-hour process with master bakers who guide the proper rise, scoring, and baking for exceptional flavor. Each loaf is made using the original 1989 starter, creating an airy, open crumb and a golden crust. For delicious taste that's worthy of your most special moments, how about La Brea's take-and-bake classic French baguettes, or its gluten-free, multi-grain sliced sandwich bread, or its rosemary olive oil round. To find a store near you that carries La Brea's breads, visit labreabakery.com. La Brea Bakery, every detail deliciously done. Hey everybody, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. This is your host, Kerry Diamond, and I can't believe who's sitting across from me. It is, no you, not the bunny, Diana Yen, the founder of the Jewels of New York. Diana was the very first guest on Radio Cherry Bomb back 100. Do you remember that?
Yes. That was the first episode.
Let's get your mic a little closer to you. I know you've got the bunny in your lap. I wish you can see this on our Instagram stories, but Diana actually brought her bunny, Cleo, who is pretty famous now.
Yeah.
Did you even own Cleo back when you were on the show?
I don't think so. She's pretty young, but yeah, she's here with us today and I'm going to speak on her behalf because bunnies don't say much.
They don't. She eats a lot. I know that.
She eats a lot.
She eats a lot. She poops a lot.
She's like a little compost, basically.
Exactly. So what's new with you? Tell everybody what the Jewels of New York even is.
Well, it's a food styling and consulting studio. We do a lot of recipe testing. We worked on the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, of course, and have a lot of publication clients and do ad campaigns and things like that. So it's a busy season for us because of the holidays.
And you have your own beautiful cookbook.
Yes, I do. It's called A Simple Feast, and Yeah, published by Roos Books.
It's so zen to just go through that book because it's so relaxing and pretty when you flip through it. You're like, I just want to live in this world that Diana has created.
Oh, thank you. I wish it was felt like that when I was making it, I'm glad that
The cookbooks behind the scenes that what you see is never what the reality is in the actual making.
You know what it's like.
Exactly. It's chaos. So we have been really lucky to be working with you over the past few weeks on this project with La Brea, who we just talked about, the great bread company. And they very kindly let us pick three influencers. I'm sure you don't walk around calling yourself an influencer,
Never.
But you are in a sense. But they told us we could work with three women who we really love to just talk about different cool recipes using their products. And it's been fun. I always love looking at your Instagram because it's such a combination of like your life and the bunny and the beautiful food you make. And so thank you for taking part in that with us.
Thank you. It's been such a fun project. And they've been great to work with. And their product is just so good. And it's been fun to explore and see like what kind of recipes can really highlight their bread.
Well, they have so many different kinds of breads. That's been really fun.
Yeah.
But we picked you because you're so good at holiday entertaining and just really making everything look so beautiful and colorful. And I was looking at the spread you did with their flatbread, mm-hmm. and you had that butternut hummus.
Yes.
And I was on the subway looking at that, and I'm so lazy. I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, she bought, like, the hummus from the store and just mixed in some butternut. But no, you made it from scratch. Got the chickpeas in there.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the butternut squash hummus because it looks unbelievable.
So I was trying to highlight their flatbreads. And actually, when I was at the Cherry Bomb Conference in San Francisco, I ate
I forgot. Huh? All three of our guests today
were there.
Oh,
yes, it was so nice. Magical to see the East Coast presence and then go to the West Coast and see a whole new, you know, all these faces. And, of course, Alice Waters was so inspiring.
West Coast Bomb Squad.
Yeah, it was amazing. But I had a fantastic meal at the Ferry Building, and it was a breakfast mezze platter. And I was like, I've never had this for breakfast. And it was such a great idea of, like, having people come over and having... The idea was to have a low-key brunch where you can make everything ahead. And you don't have to be like cooking eggs in the back and stressing out. Like, I think as a hostess, you should always, you know, your energy is really important to how your guests feel at your house or at a party. And so I like to have everything done ahead. And the mezze platter, you know, was something I thought would be perfect for brunch. And basically you have this, I did a twist on the traditional hummus, and I saw that you did this technique with the butternut squash where you roast half of it and you don't have to cube it. You don't have to do anything.
I roasted the whole thing.
It was so cool. I just learned
that
too.
Not even half of it, just the whole thing. And I was like, where has this trick been hiding my whole life?
Because the whole time, I think people are really scared to cube butternut squash or anything that's like really firm like that. And you basically, you cut in half, scoop out the seeds and toss on a sheet pan.
Well, let's be honest, it's just a pain in the ass.
It is.
And the butternut squash.
And you're just gonna puree anyway and have it, you know, be really soft. So
this literally, let's walk people through this.
Yes.
You just take your butternut squash,
right?
It doesn't matter how big it is, and you just put it on a baking sheet or some little
cut
kind
half.
Of pan.
Yeah.
No.
What?
Whole.
Oh, wait, you did it whole?
Whole.
Oh, you're living adventurously.
But that's what I thought too. I was like, because I feel like I walk through life and I just expect everything to be exploding.
Yeah.
Like barbecues, grills, manhole covers. Because
yeah.
Manhole cover did explode on my block a little while ago.
Yeah.
But so I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this in the oven and it will explode.
That's what it...
It'll burn my building down. That's uh-huh. why I put it on Instagram.
Okay.
And everyone was like, no, relax. It'll be fine. It just kind of collapses in on itself. It doesn't become like a bomb.
Oh, okay.
But I did read some people tried that with eggplant and it exploded.
Oh, it did.
So we're just talking about butternut squash here, people.
Squash.
So
okay.
Take the whole squash. Yeah. You don't even have to touch a knife and just put it in there and leave it be. Leave it be. And you can smell when it's done.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's life-changing.
I just learned something new from Carrie Diamond over here.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
So I've learned so much from you. So
yeah,
I'm glad I could repay the
favor. No, I love hearing those tips. And then the next time I'm like, okay, this is how I'm going to do it.
But people on my Instagram, it was so funny. Everyone's like, follow up, please. Like, how did
like
it work
what part
out?
Two, what happened?
Yeah. So I posted a picture of how
like,
it looks afterwards.
I ate everything.
But it was fun. It was fun. And then you just have to take the skin off and either get rid of the seeds or keep them and toast them further. But you can even, the seeds kind of steam in there. So you can even sort of eat the seeds. Yum. But anyway, we digress.
So same hummus. Thing. You can, however you want to cook your butternut squash, you pretty much cook it whole or in halves. And then you scoop out all the insides when it's soft. And after that, you basically make your basic hummus, which has, you know, chickpeas, olive oil, lemon juice, and tahini. And I think the butternut squash gives it a really kind of sweet, earthy flavor. And that really balances out with the chickpeas. And it's just like a kind of element of surprise where people are like, I've had hummus before, but what's in this?
One of the things I love that you do is you're so focused on all the senses. Mm-hmm. So sense of taste and visual. Everything you do is so colorful. I mean, we've done a lot of projects with you now over the years. But I remember... you did some bites for us for this lecture series we did, and the food was so beautiful and so colorful. And this platter you did, you just picked so many beautiful, vibrant vegetables to have to go along with the breads. It was really incredible.
Yeah, I think that part of, you know, eating is the joy of like seeing the food and getting really excited. So for me, produce is kind of the key to, you know, making everything look beautiful and inviting. And so for the mezze platter, once you make the hummus, everything else is just like, get the brightest, most beautiful veggies you can find at the market. So there was, you know, just like baby carrots and, Romanesco is always pretty, and cauliflower and things like that. And then a couple soft-boiled eggs, and then you have your La Brea flatbread that's, you know, serve it warm, and people can just even tear it into it themselves, and then you have breakfast, and that's it.
And it's such a good cheat if you're not a great food stylist. Like, I struggle, as you'll see when you look at my butternut squash photos, I really struggle with the food styling part of this. Yeah. And it does not come as naturally to me as it does to you. But going out and buying really beautiful produce and really thinking about the color, like you said, the beautiful orange carrots, that like vibrant green of Romanesco, the purple cauliflower, you can kind of cheat a little bit. Like, maybe you're not a great food stylist, but you can create such a beautiful tableau that way.
And I think just if you're able to go to a farmer's market, that's where you're going to find all of these like special things are in season. And it's really cost efficient to host that way, to just have a spread. And then if someone's like, oh, can I bring my mom's in town? You're like, oh, like just throw another egg in there. And then you don't have to worry. Cause like as a hostess, I'm always like, is someone coming or not coming? And now I have like learned to let it go and just be like, you can have a little extra and just like make food that's easy to serve a lot of people. And then you can feel relaxed.
All right. So let's talk about your baby in your lap over there. Cleo. How is Cleo these days?
Cleo has been really busy. She just launched a Christmas ornament with West Elm and the ASPCA. So it's been doing really well. We've hosted a party with them last week, and my whole family is very proud of her. They're like, finally, someone successful in the family. Don't tell Dawn I said that.
Your sister Donna, who we love. There's a really cute picture on your Instagram of Cleo surrounded by the ornaments, and it looks like they really look so much like Cleo. It's like these little Cleo babies are all around the bunny. But
we're excited.
That's so cool. You have so many fun projects going on.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Are you? So your hummus recipe can be found on thejewelsofnewyork.com.
Yes.
Right. And what are you working on for us next? I know you've got more recipes.
Am I allowed to say?
Sure, give us a sneak peek.
Okay, so another thing inspired by the trip in San Francisco, because I was with you, I was with La Brea, and I remember the first time I went there and I had their clam chowder at Fisherman's Wharf out of a bread bowl. And I was really young and I was like, wait a second, a bowl can also be edible? Like, that's a genius idea. Who thought of that? You can eat it after you're done? That's amazing. So I thought that with their rosemary round loaves, it would be perfect to serve chowder out of. Like, especially with all these cold days coming, it's just nice to have a pot of soup around. And So it was my first time making it, and I was nervous because I was like, what if it leaks? Like, I don't know how bread bowls happen or work. Never done it, but it was so good. And I love the La Brea bread because it comes to you, like, all the hard work's done. And basically when you take it out, you bake it for, you know, like 10 or 15. And then when you pull out, it's like a bakery. It's like you're a Parisian bakery and you're just, you know, pulling out loaves of perfect bread. And so with their bread, it was like really crusty and crunchy on top. And I just cut off the top and then, you know, trimmed out the sides a little bit, scooped out some of the inside. Like, I left probably like an inch around the edges so it can soak up some of the soup. And then I made this really simple clam chowder. Oh, I used cauliflower instead of potatoes. So for those of us that want something lighter and less starchy, it's a great swap out.
God, cauliflower is really the star ingredient these days.
It's
growing up,
trend.
It was sort of like Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, it was like a sad vegetable and it had no color. But now it's the star.
It's sexy. People are roasting whole cauliflowers. Mm-hmm. They're doing the cauliflower rice, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fun. So you're going to... I remember that magical moment as a child when I had soup in a bowl for the first time and you're just like, I can't believe this.
I can't believe someone thought of this idea. So I think it was a perfect thing to have with their bread. And it's so creamy that you get, like, take the top and you can just dip it into that creamy seafood broth. And it's really warming on a cold day.
So, Diana, you're one of those interesting New York women that has sort of really carved out your own path for yourself. There was nobody for you to really model your career on.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of different things. You know, you hustle big time. Any advice for women who want to get into food styling, recipe development, that kind of thing that you do?
Trying to see. Well, luckily now that Instagram is really, I feel like, the center of food, where people are exploring like what's happening in food and who are the new stars of especially styling and recipes. I think that working with what you have is important. And I think Instagram is a great platform to build yourself on. And to just be part of a community. I was talking to Coco Cakeland.
Love her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember her, you know, just saying like that she was like somewhere more remote. But the
right,
thing,
she's up in Canada.
Yes, and she was saying at your conference also that, you know, being on Instagram and just it helped her create this community and be part of this bigger picture that she, you know, didn't know was there. And it's like all of a sudden you have 1,000 friends that you didn't know about and you're talking about cake or you're talking about baking together. And so I think that Instagram can be a great way to connect to people that you never would, and just to work with what you have and just like make the best of it and enjoy yourself.
And that applies to your entertaining advice too.
Yes, like keep it cool, have fun, remember why you're doing it, and don't beat yourself up too hard.
You're so consistent, Diana. I love that. Well, thank you for coming back. It's really great that we could have the very first guest of Radio Cherry Bomb back on the air. And thank you for bringing Cleo by to say hi. Cleo, for those of you who collect copies of Cherry Bomb magazine, you can see in our issue with Kristen Kish, Cleo made a little guest appearance at that shoot. And we have a very cute picture of Chef Kristen Kish with Cleo.
That's great. Thank you for having me. And congrats on your new book again.
Oh, thanks.
It's beautiful.
All right, everybody, that's it for today's show. Radio Cherry Bomb was engineered by the one and only Dave Tatasciore. Our producers with us in the studio, Ali Mish, and thank you to Priya Krishna for some help with today's episode. Also, thank you to Le Cordon Bleu for making the season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Check out cordonbleu.edu for more about the legendary culinary school. And thank you to La Brea Bakery. Visit labreabakery.com to find a store near you that carries their delicious breads. La Brea Bakery. Every detail deliciously done. And as I mentioned, I'll be in Charleston on Sunday. Tickets are available at cherrybomb.com. And we've got a party at Bird in Brooklyn on 12/12 from 6 to 9. So check out our website for more details about that. If you live in the New York City area, we would love to see you. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody. You're the bomb.
Hi. Hi, I'm Jenny Rips, and I'm the founder of Owl's Brew, a tea and botanical-based cocktail mixer. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Janie Hoffman, founder of fabulously healthy brand Mama Chia.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.